But I always felt like just that engineering in general was teaching a set of problem-solving skills. It's not necessarily just learn to design this beam or this trim string. It's teaching a problem-solving mindset. And you could see that in the industry. A lot of folks who study engineering, my cousin studied mechanical engineering, then worked in finance for 6 years just because he wanted to. So, you know, a lot of people hire just that mindset.
You're listening to the Building Better Futures podcast, where innovation meets inspiration. In each episode, host Eric Hirani journeys alongside notable thought leaders who are shaping the future, cultivating exceptional work cultures, and nurturing the next generation of trailblazers. We aim to spark inspiration by engaging in dialogue with leaders from groundbreaking companies, innovative projects, and exceptional teams. Our goal is to empower individuals to positively impact those around them and leave a lasting legacy of positive change in our communities and society at large. Let's dive in together and explore what it takes to build better futures, one conversation at a time.
Today, I'm excited to be joined by Eleftherios Pittas, the Senior Director of Design and Construction at Tishman Speyer. Hey, Eleftherios, how are you?
Good, Eric. Thanks for having me.
Of course. And I know we just talked about this a little bit, but I'm gonna call you Lefty from here on out. It just feels easier for me. So, you know, we always start the show with some good news and gratitude. Any personal or professional good news or gratitude you'd like to share with me in the audience today?
The weather is nice out. I'm starting to look forward to summer with the kids. I just had my first overnight trip with my son for Cub Scouts 2 weeks ago, which was incredibly memorable for both of us. And my twin daughters are graduating pre-K to go to kindergarten next week. So we have that school event. So just a lot of fun stuff to look forward to with the family.
A lot of awesome family stuff. I always like to share a gratitude too. My easy gratitude is to you as a guest for making the time, for being on, for, you know, indulging me here. I just always like to be thankful and express my gratitude to you. On a personal note, kind of cool, I wasn't thinking about it, but since you mentioned the Cub Scouts, my dad's going to be honored by Scouting America, which is Boy Scouts, so we're really excited about that. So I guess I'll share that as my personal good news.
That's awesome. Congrats.
Yeah, you know what, I'll send you an invite if you want to join us. It's a great organization, and we're really excited for it. Very cool.
They had some cool stats about who the Cub Scouts are, and like, they make up X percentage of CEOs, X percentage of astronauts, armed forces. So very cool. I was going to share it with my son tonight.
That is really cool. So just on Cub Scouts, because he must be younger then, right?
Yeah. He's a kindergartner right now, so Cub Scouts.
Oh, wait. So you have a son. And then did you say you also have a daughter?
I have a 6-year-old son and twin 5-year-old daughters. Busy household. Yeah, they're 14 months apart.
That's amazing. Well, congrats, man. That's really cool. I have a young daughter on the way, so very exciting. But 3 within 14 months, I don't know.
I like a challenge.
But I'm sure you loved it, so. All right, cool. Well, that's some great news. And congrats to your son and to your daughter. Sounds like everybody's having an exciting time. Let's get to you, though. Give us the background, maybe 90 seconds, 2 minutes. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? How do you get to your current role? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm a New Yorker born and raised out of Queens. I grew up in Woodside and then Flushing. Knew I always wanted to do something in AEC industry. Wasn't sure if it was going to sort of be architecture, but I gravitated towards engineering, studied civil engineering at Cooper Union in the East Village, did a master's at Columbia. I realized I loved the engineering concept, but I wasn't so keen on practicing it and doing the design. I just felt like I wanted a little more of touching of everything, not just the design side. So got lucky, sort of a job after college, working more in property management renovations. And that, with a small segue at the New York City School Authority, I ended up after that at Tishman Speyer through a connection I made in my first job before that. And it's been a fantastic experience ever since.
Very cool. It sounds like the power of networking, would you say?
Yes.
A little bit?
I didn't appreciate it when I was 22, but even the connection I made with somebody at my first job before the SCA at 22 had value. And I was just making a connection. The person was nice and I enjoyed working with them, but it pays off.
Part of the show is about how do we like inspire the next generation and get them just excited, because I had a bunch of great mentors, and it sounds like you've had some good, at least networking opportunities and mentors probably in your career. But it's really important to build those relationships, right? It doesn't matter how old you are or what part of your career you're in. Just, you know, your network is important.
Even if the work you're doing is not necessarily overlapping right now, it's a small industry and you never know who you may want to call on or who may want to call on you in the future.
Yeah. And then you also got your master's, right, from Columbia, I think?
Yes.
Yeah, so my undergrad is from the Food Foundation, from Columbia University's engineering school. But I remember the kids from Cooper Union were just pure geniuses, so I'm sure you were probably that way.
I think it's overstated. I think we were, you know, we had a good work ethic, and we liked what we did. We had a lot of creative peers that just did fun things, even outside of school, that were just creative people with fun projects outside. It was a good group of people.
So I have to ask, and I assume the answer is going to be yes, but have you ever been to McSorley's?
Of course.
That's where we will hang out then. When we get together one night, we'll go to McSorley's, because even from all the way up on the Upper West Side, we used to come down for our fair share of evenings.
The well-known mainstay in that area.
It's a good time. So you touched on you went to school for civil engineering, but you didn't necessarily want to just do that. But I'm curious, like, how's that background change your approach in developing projects? Like, do you think it does help, right, in some ways?
It definitely helps. So civil engineering, obviously, you know, I work on ground up a lot at the Tishman Spire. And obviously, it's equipped me with a lot of skills to understand things, whether it relates to the civil design, the site drainage, the structure of the building. But I always felt like that engineering in general was teaching a set of problem-solving skills. It's not necessarily just learn to design this beam or this trim strain. It's teaching a problem-solving mindset. And you could see that in the industry. A lot of folks who study engineering, my cousin studied mechanical engineering, then worked in finance for 6 years just because he wanted to. So, you know, a lot of people hire just that mindset. But obviously going to school for this stuff, it lets you talk the talk, walk the walk, and you're in meetings and really understand things. You know, I still had to take a lot of intro courses to electrical engineering and mechanical engineering. So you, again, can interface with those design disciplines during your project. So it's definitely helped, but obviously I don't understand everything, and I'm definitely out of my league in certain conversations. But I understand enough that if someone breaks it down for me, we can have a thoughtful conversation about how to tackle a problem we have on a project, on a building, for example.
Yeah, that's cool. I guess I was naive, because similar to what you just described, like when I went to engineering school, I just assumed everybody left and became engineers or construction management, you know, like, but in the industry. And I think something like probably 60% of my graduating class did not become engineers. They went into banking or finance or like consulting, but not engineering consulting, like McKinsey consulting, BCG,
exactly.
Corporate
banking,
consulting.
IT, friends working for Disney and ESPN, just doing sort of data analytics. It's just very cool to hear the different stories.
Like you said, engineers are trained to think and problem solve, and that's really what the world needs. We need a lot of problem solvers and a lot of thinkers. So talking about like solving problems, how do you define like a successful project? You know, you mentioned that you're doing a lot of ground up development, and you know, when you're engineering, maybe you're focused on engineering. When you're architecture, you're focused on architecture. And when you're the construction manager, you're focused on delivering the project. How do you look like at a successful project as a developer? What defines success?
So there's the obvious, I feel like I've seen this graphic before, the project management triangle with the scope, schedule, and budget, and having to balance all three. Those are the obvious ones, and we obviously have to hit all three, no questions about it. But I've definitely seen, whether it's Tishman Spire on its own or the industry as a whole, move towards, like, scope becomes, quality becomes like a higher level of quality to the point where it's almost like customer satisfaction. When we're delivering core and shell spaces to our customers at the Spiral, it's not here, I met your lease deliverables, I'm done, take your space. It's really walking with them, making sure they're satisfied with their space. To the extent they need during construction, they say, I need more elevators to get my manpower up the building. How can we help you while we're still constructing the Spiral? It's definitely a bit more of we try and like white glove it and really treat customers with a lot more thought and care rather than just finish on time and on budget.
It's interesting. So you're right. I mean, I guess as a developer, the tenant concerns are a huge part of it. And when you're thinking about tenants, I guess you know, that's internal, but also external. You got to think about the surrounding community, or like, how does that play into the success of a project then?
Definitely. So wherever we're typically developing, we definitely work with the local community. We'll get involved in the local business improvement districts. Like at the Spiral, we are members of the Hell's Kitchen Huts and Yards Alliance, which helped develop parks along the area. So we'll work closely with them on events. Even my current project, I'm managing affordable housing up in the Bronx. We have multiple meetings with the community boards to present our project, to talk about what we were doing. We listened to concerns. They wanted to keep all of the existing really mature street trees on our site, surrounding our site alive during construction. We rose to the challenge and we developed some crazy supportive excavation to keep the trees alive while excavating right in the root zone. And I'm happy to say I was out today and the trees are blooming. So we've kept the trees alive while excavating within inches of them. And we're even in that area. We're part of the Dan Cortlandt Park Alliance, and we're actually going tomorrow, volunteer day. We're going to be in this pond pulling water chestnuts out of a local lake, which is really fun. But the point is, we really try and coordinate with our local communities. We send, on my project, send weekly updates, or every 2 weeks we give an update to the community of what work is going to be happening. So we're not, you know, waiting to hear a complaint. We're saying, here's what we're going to be doing. And we have an open phone and email line for them to say, hey, we have this question, this concern, and this way we'll answer, we'll respond, we'll work with our general contractors and our partners. And I feel like it's a very good relationship.
So you're going to have to tell me, what is pulling water chestnuts out of a lake? Like, so you're volunteering
I
to
wish
do
I
that?
Could pull a picture for you, but water chestnuts are an invasive species. They're in this lake, and you'll see them growing at the surface with like long tendrily vines below. So I'm going to be in waders, like up to my chest in water, pulling them out. I did it 2 years ago. It was a lot of fun, definitely an ambitious volunteering opportunity, but I like a challenge. And I think I heard we're going to have 50 volunteers tomorrow, so it should be very, including pulling some weeds at the park, but very fun. I'll send you photos after.
Yes. Cool. And I mean, when you say water chestnuts, I think of like chestnuts, like the ones we eat, or no, this is something totally different.
I don't think these are edible. I'm not entirely positive.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And so they're invasive in the lake and you guys are going to pull them up.
Yeah,
cool. And are the 50 all like Tishman's Fire volunteers or project volunteers?
Tomorrow's really great. I don't know if it's our New York or our U.S. volunteer day. So we, you know, have probably a dozen sites around the city and you know, maybe New Jersey for areas we're working in, like the Rockaways where we have our Edgemere complex, Hudson Boulevard area where the Spiral is, and like I mentioned, my project. So the whole company goes out, volunteers, picks different sites.
I really love that because a big part of the show, we talk about how the projects we build impact the communities. But you guys are like, you're going one step further. It's not just about the project. It's about getting involved, you know, even during construction and helping the community. And at Infinite, we try to do a lot through like Infinite Cares and some of the other activities. Having a true volunteer day is something I've explored with their team and we haven't gotten around to it. And you really reminded me to repurpose that, bring that mission back, because I do want to do something like that. So that's really cool. Yeah, I'd love for you to send me some pictures, but also like if you want to share more details about what that program looks like for you guys.
Absolutely. And I will say the one fun one, it's personally rewarding. You know, it sounds cliche, but it is a lot of fun. And one of my favorites I've done a couple of years was Habitat for Humanity. And obviously like homes, it's such a tangible thing. Everyone needs some type of home. And like some of the stories you heard while volunteering, and typically because we're such a big group, they just keep you doing like one major activity. Like you're just going to demo this stuff and remove it. Whereas if you go on your own in smaller groups, they can have you do multiple things because it's less, more manageable. But I've done it on my own once, having that humanity on the weekend, just because I thought it was so cool. So definitely have recommendations for you.
I love that. Yeah, I've been Habitat for Humanity a few times, and it's a lot of fun. All right, well, sticking to this line of thought, I always like to ask a question about like, in the projects you've worked on in your career, do you have one that like particularly stood out where you just like remember being especially proud because of how that project was going to impact the lives of either, you know, the tenants or the users or whoever was going to be in the building?
I feel like there's a lot of, every project has its little touches to it that you'll always remember. Using my most recent one being the Spiral, it was sort of a crazy time. Right? We broke ground in 2018 and we finished core and shell substantially in the end of 2022. Right through the smack dab in the middle was COVID. Never going to forget that. We were shut down for 11 weeks. And I was like, I'm not going to take credit for this. Turner, but like work together. Turner was very creative on how they resequenced the building, how we were selective in overtime use. And we got our TCO only one business day later than we had projected pre-COVID, which is wild for being shut down for nearly, you know, 11 and a half, 12 weeks. And like the building has Pfizer as an anchor tenant, you know, acres of vaccines. And I've heard stories from other customers in the building, like W. Boyne Plimpton Law Firm, like they're very proud of the sustainability features of the building. And when they moved in, some of the amenities we introduced at the top of the house, they were saying, this is just really nice. We think it'll help us attract summer talent and maybe keep summer talent, like young folks that really want to be proud of where they were. It's not just a paycheck. It's a place to, you know, live, work, play. So I'm really excited now about this affordable housing job I'm on, obviously, because I'm also going to be bringing 339 homes to New Yorkers in need. But I feel like I haven't had that success until it's done. So I'll come back to you in a couple of years with that one.
But now you got to tell us, what are some of the cool amenities of the Spiral? Tell us about the building, actually. Tell us about how many stories, how big, how many square feet. You said live, work, play. So there's a residential component or is
no,
it also?
I mean more, I should say live, you know, work and play. Like
work and play, yeah.
But look, I will say some of the customers are work long hours, so it feels like that's where some of my comment was. But like they enjoy staying there at work. It's 2.5 million or 2.8 million square feet, 66 stories. You know, very proud of the customers we have in the building. You know, basically a 6-year project. And there's still some interiors going on, but a lot of the customers doing it themselves. Amenity-wise, we have a really nice lobby, beautiful high ceilings. But what we did, and this was a pivot in the middle of the project, was we introduced the clubhouse, which is our top floor amenity, which is a combo with our studio brand, which is our co-working brand. So we made like a top floor amenity that you can rent out for events, just have a coffee or a beer with coworkers after work. They have really cool events and programming, like monthly jazz nights or wine tasting events curated by the chefs of Papasan, our new restaurant on the ground floor, which I've heard of amazing things. I still haven't had a chance to go try it out, but I'd recommend it from what I've heard. The views up there are stunning. It's what's nice is it's essentially democratized to anybody who works in the building. You don't have to pay. If you're renting in the building, whether that's your Pfizer or Debevoise taking 10 floors, or if you're renting a single spot in studio on the 24th floor, which is our co-working brand where we have like shared offices, you can get access to that top floor amenity and get 1,000 feet in the air, get views of the entire city, you know, up towards Central Park, east to the, it's just stunning views. And that was a pivot mid-COVID because we just decided, we thought, what can we do better here? And it was definitely challenging. The development team brought this to us from the design and construction perspective. But in hindsight, we had to do it. Like, I don't know how, if we didn't have it, the building would be very different.
Well, and it was challenging. Why? Because it was just interior fit out changes, or there were actual like corn shell changes that had to take place?
We put this at the top of the building that was meant to be only mechanical floor. So mid down, we redesigned. I should have elaborated on that. We redesigned our top floor mechanical floor, squeezed all the mechanicals to one side of the building on that floor, had to essentially opt out that we're not going to stage some of it for future tenant mechanicals if they wanted to put in a custom piece of generator. Since that was a mechanical floor, all the windows were meant to be opaque. They had back pans. We had to crowbar them all out and like factory paint the mullions back to a new finish, but on site, not if they were installed and we had to do it. We had to turn back some steel that was being delivered because it was going to be a diagonal right in the middle of the space. And we had to redesign the structure a little bit to transfer that load away. We did sort of getting it with steel above on the roof. Just a lot of crazy things. And then the idea was, hey, none of this can affect your core of shell TCO, which we were like, it's a challenge. But I will say to the executives that made that decision, including the design construction side, very smart move, and it worked out all very well.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp, your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.
It's really cool. You know, looking back on projects, and I have this too, it's always like fond memories and that was so awesome. But in the thick of it, you get emotionally challenged. Was that like the most emotionally challenging part of the project when they were just like, hey, we're actually going to change the entire mechanical plant here and deal with it?
It probably was, or one of the few. In addition, we had to raise 4 elevators up to serve that floor. So it wasn't even served by passenger elevators. So we had to redesign the top elevator machine room, raise the elevators. And I'm very prone to getting stressed and anxious, but I realized you have to take a step back and realize, first of all, you're never in it alone. As much as you feel like, we were part of a team of, let's say, 7 design and construction professionals. So while I may have had to do the elevator, all the elevators in the building, and the clubhouse was part of my baby, that build out, I realized I had a team of other people that I could count on to coach me, guide me. Hey, I have this unique structural problem. Let me tap the guy that knows this, or the architectural problem. And everyone's willing to help. And you're never really in it like alone. It's never going to be catastrophic. The sky's never really falling as much as it may feel like that in the moment. I've always felt like you go and sleep on and go for a walk, and you'll realize it definitely wasn't as bad. The next day, the next morning, you realize, yes, you still have to solve it. You may have 5 more ideas that came out of sleeping on it or resting on it, and you feel a lot better about it. And I've come to do that for a lot of things in my career.
So part of the show I mentioned earlier is about like projects we work on and how they impact the community. Another part of the show I always like to touch on is, what are we doing for the next generation? And I think that is such good advice. And so I just want to highlight it, which is, it's never as bad as you think it is. And I remember being like, you know, in earlier parts of my career, it just felt like the sky was falling. Like anytime something didn't go perfectly right, I won't say panic mode, but like I'm stressed, right? I'm stressed about this. And there's like ways to deal with stress, right? And there's like, there's a good way to deal with stress, which is like, okay, I've now internalized the problem and I'm going to work towards a solution. I feel like sometimes I was in like the bad place of stress, which are like, I'm going to stress about this, but I'm doing nothing to solve it. And I'm just stressed now. And yeah, it's, I mean, I think it's natural and our industry is stressful. You know, I mean, it's just part of what we do is, you know, managing stress is a big part of it. It's our stress or client stress or partner stress. Everybody's stressed about something. But advice to like, to any, especially like early career professionals, but this probably applies to anyone in any stage of their career, that it's never the end. Take a deep breath. Like you said, sleep on it. Just like come up with a solution. And for the most part, one of my favorite things about our industry is how collaborative we are, right? Like if you bring a problem to your team, you did it earlier where you said, hey, I can't take credit for this Turner really, but we did it together, right? And you also mentioned how you had a team on this project and you were doing it together. And it's just really important. I have a younger sister. She's about 2 or 3 years into her career and she's an engineer. I remember being that age and everything was stressful because everything felt like the end of the world. And I think she's going through that. And I try to help coach her through that. But it's hard, right? Because until you've done that for 5 or 10 years and then you realize, you know what? It really wasn't the end of the world. I remember and I solved that problem and we all got there and it was cool.
Yeah, it's all relative. It comes with experience and having those things over a couple of years versus seeing them 10 years later. It's obviously, it's all the frame of mind you're in 10 years later. And you can look back and see that.
Yeah, definitely look back and not only see that like it wasn't as big of a problem, but also that you were capable of solving it. I think that's another just thing. So I'm going to actually flip to a question I like to ask, and it's going to be for the next generation. And you're involved in some of the industry organizations, right? Let's start with that. Why don't you tell us about some of the industry organizations?
So obviously you and I met through the Year of Building Congress, you know, just as far as a member company, and I'm on the, we're on the steering committee for the Young Professionals Committee. I was a co-chair a couple of years ago, still not anymore, still on the committee. Again, great group of people, and you get to really meet industry veterans across a wide array of industries, not just the typical AEC, but you have lawyers, risk managers. That's actually what I really like about design and construction and the developer's role. Like, I get to touch a little bit of everything, whether it's the design, the financing of the project, the insurance of the project, the community aspect of the project. I really like having that. So the Building Congress is like the culmination of all those things and packaged up in one.
And Building Congress is great. And I always like to make a plug for the organizations because I think it's important that we as an industry support them because they do a lot to support us and also our development. And then so the question I like to ask after that is just like, let's say 3 pieces of advice you want to give to the next generation of leaders, whether they're at Tishman or just in the industry in general. What do you think is things you've learned over your career that are really important to share?
I'm going to do one of them, but make it long enough that it sounds like 3 pieces.
Perfect. No, one is great.
I would say the way I think about this is like, try and learn as much as possible. That's not just book learning of thermodynamics and civil engineering. That's learn from the execs. I was thinking about this. Actually, listen to your podcast and not my episode. People should listen to the other episode because I found it thoughtful. Like I listened to a few to hear these executives from different firms. And like, I think especially the younger generation expects like leaps in their career very quickly. A career is a marathon, not a sprint. So, and the CEOs of these companies didn't start out as CEOs when they came out of college. Find it, like, people should really listen to different things. Find out more about how projects get financed, how they get insured, because understanding those different perspectives, at least from the USA real estate side, like, a developer has to wear many hats, and, like, sometimes I have to wear a hat of the engineer to get the contractor to understand where he's coming from to help them negotiate problems. So, one is like learn as much as you can. Two, develop a set of like ability to see different perspectives, see from their perspective to help bridge gaps and solutions when you have them, and just absorb everything you can like a sponge. Again, even if you're in a meeting where you think you have no value to add, just pay attention to everything that's being said because you're going to learn something about some engineering concept that would not apply to you right now, but you may need it in the future or it'll spark something for you.
Great advice. I liked particularly lifelong learner, right? There is no end to education. Got to always be willing to learn more and absorb information. And I think that's great advice. So I was actually, I know we talked about this, I'm at the Waterfront like Pathways program, and that's one of those things. I'm going to now learn about waterfront design and construction. I think it's going to be really cool. And we're on some projects that are on the waterfront and it's exciting. But also, you know, I'm like, I took a course on AI. I know you keep mentioning finance. Like, I took a class on finance because I just didn't understand what a capital stack actually looked like, what the words actually meant. I hear them all the time. I'm like, at some point, I need to understand what they mean.
When I got hired at Tisch & Spire, I just assumed you can get a loan based on your name. I didn't realize how much due diligence went into it. I was naive, and I'll happily admit that, but it's been a really cool learning experience.
So one of the guys in the program is actually a developer, mostly multifamily. And I was just picking his brain because I'm a huge fan of real estate and development. Like, I think it's a scary proposition, right? Because you're kind of going from an idea you have and hoping that all the regulatory agencies will grant you permission. Your design will come in the way you want. You know, your architect will work to your standards, and then you're going to build it. But I think it's really cool because it's really the true, like, I have a vision and I'm going to see it to fruition. Do you have any, like, skills? You know, you said you got into this business, you didn't know much about finance, but any hard skills you would recommend to anyone trying to enter, like, the real estate development industry?
It's tough for me to say. I don't want to say I fell into this, but it was someone referred me in a Tisch & Spire, and I did go through 3 rounds of interviews. It wasn't like a give me job by any means, but I was lucky to know somebody that referred me and said, hey, this guy's a smart, hard worker, good at managing certain aspects of budget, like, got my foot in the door. I think, like you said, all those problems, it's not necessarily that we have the answers to all of them, but we'll have somebody that has an answer to one of them, and you can guide yourself with certainty that you could say, all right, I'm fairly certain I can get this kind of building approved on this site. Like, as a company, we have, Tisch & Spire is a great professional. Very refreshing and nice to work with. Like, I may understand the bricks and mortar of the building, but someone else understands in our company, based on a city RFP, how to shape the building on the lot. Another one knows how to estimate how much it costs. Hard skills, I don't know. I mean, if you want to really go into the traditional real estate, obviously finance or real estate backgrounds, real estate finance and investment degrees, those things definitely help. If you want to get more into the business side of things, I think the design and construction piece, I'm at my ideal center point where I get to do the fun and down and dirty stuff where I have to wear boots on a construction site covered in mud, but I still can then go back to the office and talk through some of the challenges with the finance folks. So it's the ability to maybe be a jack of all trades in certain respects.
So you mentioned the team has all these, like, great professionals, right? Some of them know about, like, hey, what can you put on the slot? How high can we go? What type of tenants can we have? What was the thing that surprised you most about, like, the regulatory process? Like, when was the worst, like, you were like, wait, we have to get waterproof kind of situation?
It was how many different, like, regulatory agencies there are. They're all great, and they all want to do the right thing. I wish, unfortunately, they had more people. I think that, like, more people would help things move faster. I'm actually not saying, hey, let's cut red tape, because I think these regulations exist for very good reasons. I just think if there was more people and applications get reviewed. But, I mean, New York City, right, you have the DOT, DEP, it's like an alphabet soup, DOB, Parks and Rec, NYPD, FDNY, you know, then you can do the New York State DEC. It's just, you have to know a lot of different things, and you don't know what might apply to your job or not. Once you do start to get it, it's like having a little cheat code to understanding at least what I need to go and get done. It's still challenging, but it's just surprising. Once having done a revocable consent for Bollards and Spiral, very challenging, because it's most of those agencies I mentioned get involved in revocable consent, because the parks cares about where you put the trees with respect to the bollards. The FDNY and the DEP care about that water, the fire hydrants and their respect to the bollards. DOT itself, who gives you the revocable, their other divisions like street lights and pedestrian ramps care about those aspects as it relates to the bollards. So it's an interesting, like, puzzle piece putting that one together, talking about how the agencies see things and sort of internal workings.
Tell us a little, what's the revocable? What does that mean? Like, they can move the bollards at some point?
A revocable consent is the DOT giving you a consent saying, I'm giving you permission to do this, but if you don't comply, I can revoke that consent. And if the bollard go in the way or something, they say, I will revoke it. Or if we break a rule in this agreement, you know, that only whatever, like, we'd ever get into that situation. And that's just wrong. Yeah.
But interesting. Very cool. Yeah. If not. So everything you know today, looking into the future, and I think you might have just answered this question, but what would you change about how cities are developed? What changes do you think are coming in the next decade?
Well, I mean, it's interesting. City of Yes and, like, that stuff. And I know
that's really exciting. I went to a session on that.
But it's very hot button right now. And there's certain people aren't excited about it. I don't have many opinions on it. I mean, I think what's good for builders is obviously good for the industry. But I know others may not see it that way from local municipalities. I think ideas like that are what we need broadly. And like, the ability to enact those changes. I don't have the answer on how to enact those changes. Yeah, and I know it's tough because obviously these agencies have budgets, so that defines how who's working for them and how many people they have. But I'm not advocating let's cut red tape. I'm saying it'd be interesting to hear if there are creative ways to either get those same approvals in shorter timeframes, whether there's a mandatory review period that the agencies can't exceed or more people to review applications. But I think the more we can build, we'll solve a lot of the problems for New York, housing problems, infrastructure problems. I think everyone's intentions are in the right place. It's obviously just a challenging problem. Like I brought up the revocable consent. Like I can't imagine how difficult some of these infrastructure problems that are, I'm not even touching those, right? I build a building. I get my power, lighting, and sewer. I can't imagine the actual main city infrastructure and those challenges, building near subway tunnels, near buildings. So don't have an answer to those for sure.
Nice. So, you know, I'm a big quotes person. So sometimes I like to ask people if they have like a quote or a mantra like they subscribe to. Do you have a life motto or something like that?
I have one is I'm on the right side of the dirt. So how's my day going? I'm on the right side of the dirt. A bit morbid, but no, I mean, I'm grateful for what I've got. And that's me.
I think that's a great one. What do they say? Simplicity is key, right? Like that's perfect. I agree with you. We're on the right side of the dirt. So it's funny, the real estate developer in the program with me, one of the things he and I were talking about was like, how do we pay it forward? And like, you can't take it with you, right? So you might as well do some good and leave it behind. So I like that idea. While we're here, let's do what we can, right? While we're on the right side of the dirt. Yeah. Well, with that, I'll jump us into the lightning round. So I know these are fast fire questions. Whatever comes to mind first, is there anything you collect?
I do not collect anything.
I don't either. But I always think it's fun to see if someone else does so. Do you have a go-to like show that you binge or love to watch?
So since I had the Cub Scout event, this is a recent thing. Since my son's Cub Scout event, it was in Norwalk, Connecticut Aquarium, and they showed a really cool, you go to an IMAX theater at some point and you watch like a 40-minute, like custom edited BBC Planet Earth kind of thing. So after that, like I thought it was great and it was really cool. I'd been binge watching old Planet Earth and like Blue Planet episodes with my kids and like they, this is like 3 weeks ago. They can like recite the episodes by heart now because I've been watching it so much. But
it's really great stuff. The Planet Earth and I forget what the other one
Blue
you mentioned.
Planet. Yeah, we know Blue less planet, about the oceans than we do about outer space. Like it's so
space,
crazy.
Yeah. It's crazy. Really cool and great for your kids. I mean, they learn a lot. That's awesome.
More into, I mean, I've been driving a lot. More into podcasts. Like I like small short stories. Like maybe some sad topic, but like a really interesting one about, just listen to one called Operation Steak Knife about this undercover agent for the IRA that was actually an informant for MI5. And like just, you know, very sad to hear the stories of the families he affected, but like fascinating stories to hear. I like those kind of short, more personal stories that people tell.
I love history and I love stories like you're saying. And we actually, this must have been pre-COVID now, so it must have been like 7 or 10 years ago even. I went to Ireland and then we went to Northern Ireland and we did a tour and you hear about like what happened back then. And it's just
troubled. Yeah.
It's sad. And it was interesting because I think we were in Belfast, but like you get that like somber feeling, like you can tell that something happened here, but incredible history. And just, it was really interesting to walk around and hear the stories. And
it wasn't that long ago. So a lot of people are connected to that. Hearing the stories on this thing was about like, you know, of course, like people who were, didn't want to speak, like people whose parents may have been informants or may not have been, but it, like put aside that unfortunately they lost their parent because they were allegedly an informant. They won't even talk about it because it's still looked down upon. And it's crazy that sort of generational struggle. But I would say, hey, you're good to learn about history so it doesn't repeat itself.
Definitely true. What's your favorite outdoor activity?
I love summer in general. My favorite one that I don't do often enough, stand-up paddleboarding. So my wife got me into it. We bought one, a foam one, probably 8 or 9 years ago. And then just 2 or 3 years ago, I got an inflatable one, a lot easier to work with, although inflating it at the beach takes like 20 minutes. I'm more of a summer sports guy than a winter guy. And I love like just getting my son on it and like we'll just sit and like I'll row out a little bit, look at it. It's fun. That's what I'm looking forward to this summer for sure.
It's really cool. I've only done paddleboarding maybe like once or twice, but I did it 2 summers ago. We were going kayaking, but they only had 2 kayaks left. So my sister and my wife took the kayaks. So I was like, all right, I'll paddleboard wherever. I was out there for hours, man. I had a great, it's easier than I was expecting it to be. I thought it was going to be really challenging, but it wasn't. I was like free flowing across the water.
Great workout.
I had a great time. And, you know, and we were jumping in the water and stuff. That's really cool. I love how much you do with your kids. You know, everything you do and is kind of revolving around with kids. My daughter's a little bit young, but I'm really excited to like have those experiences with her when she can get older and like enjoy a day at the beach or come out with us.
Or bring her to your projects. I mean, that's one fun thing. I like to bring them a tour of the site. You know, that's what I like about our industry. It's so tangible. You get to drive down the highway, say that building, I was involved in that. They're at an age where they start to really care about it now. So it's cool.
It's awesome. And then, all right, a last one. I'm just going to, do you like to cook or no?
I do, although I feel like I have less time for it recently, but yeah.
What is your favorite dish to make?
I used to do a fun, I mean, this is not my favorite, but the first one that comes to my head is because it's something I used to make a lot for my wife was a fun meatloaf. I read it in like a Tim Ferriss 4-hour chef book. Meatloaf wrapped up with spinach leaves on the inside and like a goat cheese log in it. And so when you cook it, it like melts really nice. It's really good flavor. And you could argue you had some vegetables because of the spinach leaves. But it was just a fun one that I remember first making for my wife when we were first started dating. But I can't say I've cooked a lot recently. Although it's summer weather now, looking forward to grilling for sure.
You know, I just learned. So I like to read a lot, or at least do a lot of audiobooks. And so I've 4-hour work week by Tim Ferriss is one of them.
Yeah. He goes from like basic stuff to at the end of it. I didn't try these, but like, what do they call it? Molecular gastronomy, like making like bubbles out of, or like chocolate pasta, like crazy scientific stuff. He really gets into topics I've seen no one else do.
That's cool. I gotta check that out. Well, I mean, this was awesome, man. I really appreciate you being on. You have any final thoughts before we sign off?
No, I was going to say, thank you for having me. I'm happy to talk to anybody about the AEC industry. Family both tired of hearing about it, so glad to talk to you about it.
It's a good outlet, right?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, thanks again. So I'll just say that's all the time we have for today. So we'll include any links to resources we talked about during the show in the notes. Thanks again for listening, everybody, and keep an eye out for the next episode.
Thanks, Eric.
This episode is brought to you by Infinite Consulting Corp., your go-to firm for MBE certified project and construction management consulting. Discover how Infinite can help you build a better future at infiniteconsultingcorp.com.